Hi, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Slim, she's Mia.
Hello!
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll take a look at our own watchlist, all under 30 minutes or your money back guaranteed.
First up, we are going to talk about two hyper icons, Michael Bay and Sonic the Hedgehog. The people demanded it, the watchlisters. Has a podcast ever talked about Bay, Sonic, and Tony Hawk all in the same episode?
It's never been done, Mia, and I think we should probably add in Chris Pine's luscious hair. We'll get into Chris Pine's hair later in this episode as well.
We have Pine Bay Sonic Hawk?
That's it.
Pine Bay Sonic Hawk. We've done it.
Hashtag
Pine Bay Sonic Hawk. That's the new EGOT.
This is maybe the biggest episode we've ever done for a weekend watchlist, so we probably have to just jump face first into this weekend.
I do think that we should talk about our huge new number one movie on Letterboxd, Passing Parasite. God. We want to give a shout out to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, what an iconic moment this week. We actually were lucky enough to talk to the Daniels. We had their reaction. They had an acceptance speech, very tongue-in-cheek acceptance speech. So that full podcast episode are actually coming to this feed next week. But we have a bunch of information about that and some fun links that we'll share later in this episode. I can't wait to talk about it.
So we will get to all of that in a bit. But first, this weekend, what's hitting theaters and your couch?
Michael Bay is back, Mia. Michael Bay is back in theaters. Everyone loves those Transformers movies, all 20 of them that he did. A decorated veteran, Will Sharp, desperate for money to cover his wife's medical bills, asks for help from his adopted brother, Danny, a charismatic career criminal. Danny instead offers him a score, the biggest bank heist in Los Angeles history, $32 million. Jake Gyllenhaal and Yahya Abdul-Mateen, when Michael Bay releases a movie, I feel like it could go either way. People could drift into doing jokes. You know, it's Michael Bay, et cetera, et cetera. And he's kind of a nut. But I feel like some people are enjoying Ambulance so far. Have you seen some of the reviews come in for Ambulance in LA specifically?
I think people are genuinely enjoying Ambulance, especially my Twitter feed. It's LA based.
Right.
So I think they're just having a fun time. Like, I can't tell. I never know if people are being ironic when they're like, the new Michael Bay slaps. It's like, I can't tell, but it seems genuine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna hazard a guess that it is genuine fun. The main thing I know about Michael Bay is that in college, I had a film professor say that he is an auteur pushing the boundaries of kinetic cinema.
I agree. He's such a weird bird. People love Armageddon, Bad Boys, The Island. He also did. So I enjoy watching his film. So I'm actually pretty excited to see Ambulance with Jake Gyllenhaal. Where do you stand on Yahya Abdul-Mateen?
He's awesome, unequivocally.
I didn't realize he was Sexy Morpheus. I totally forgot, and I just watched that movie.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
What? He was in the direct to HBO Max Matrix 4 that just dropped, and he was the quote-unquote Morpheus character. And before that, I'd only seen him in Candyman. So this past like year and a half, I've been seeing a lot of his films. I really like him a lot.
So I thought you were saying Sexy Morbius.
No, I was not.
Okay, that's why I...
You did like a triple take. Yeah. You did a triple take in the studio when I said Sexy Morpheus.
It was shocking.
Let's spotlight one review before we go to our next movie. Raphael has seen Ambulance, so I'll spotlight a few sections. While everyone is watching the latest from Ty West, I had the chance to view Michael Bay's next Mayhem, or shall I say Bayhem, a film that everyone seemed to be looking forward to seeing except me. As a result, I went into this picture with the lowest of expectations. And then they go on to say, and the cam? Man, the cam! It flows, it swings, it flies, it floats, it drops, it drones, it smash, it Fs, it bombs. I think there's one scene where it does some hip-hop, too. The man did everything in his power to keep it in constant motion. So,
see, kinetic auteur.
There you go.
Mark it down.
Hashtag kinetic auteur.
Kinetic auteur.
What's
Michael
next
Bay
on our list this week, Mia? What else is dropping?
Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the sequel, is also dropping. After settling in Green Hills, Sonic is eager to prove he has what it takes to be a true hero. His test comes when Dr. Robotnik returns, this time with a new partner, Knuckles? In search for an emerald that has the power to destroy civilizations. Sonic teams up with his own sidekick, Tails, and together they embark on a globe-trotting journey to find the emerald before it falls into the wrong hands.
Have you ever played a Sonic video game? Mia, is it your bag?
Yes, yes. As a gamer girl, I have played a lot of Sonic. My favorite is Sonic Adventure 2 with the little chows. Yeah. If anybody remembers little chows, I hope they're in the sequel. Yes, I am a big fan of this little blue guy.
My son, my son's interest level for weekend movies depends on what kind of YouTube ads he gets for it. So he has asked me about Sonic the Hedgehog 2 and said that he wants to see it. I have not seen the first one, so I might just go in totally blind for Sonic the Hedgehog 2. But it's time for my son and I to unite at the theater. Sonic and Knuckles, the two of us.
Knuckles is the bad guy. Yeah, he should be Tails.
Depending on how good the movie is, he might leave the film as Knuckles. I don't know. I think that's Idris Elba.
It is.
Does the voice for
and
Knuckles.
He said it wouldn't be sexy in a statement. He said it. He's lying. He's just lying to all of us.
I love also how that could have read. In a statement to Weekend Watchlist, Idris has stated that he will not do this voice sexily. So he wanted us to know
that
for the podcast.
I just don't see how that's a possibility, but I do need to talk about Eggman.
Please.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was relieved upon this trailer because it turns out that they made Eggman not as sexy as he was in the first movie. Not to talk about sexy Sonic characters too much, but I do want to say...
It's a safe space.
Okay, this is a safe space to discuss this. All I really have to say is that I went into the first movie being ready to be horny for James Marsden, and then I left being horny for Jim Carrey's Eggman. So that's a warning. This time around, they shaved his head, they gave him the big mustache, Eggman mustache, so I'm in less danger, but I do feel a little bit relieved that I won't have to have that weird crisis.
I wonder if they got some test audience feedback. Please make him less sexy. And maybe Idris got the same note. There was probably some kind of sexy task force working on these Sonic movies, and they had to make changes.
I mean, it's the only answer. So yeah, go see the de-sexified Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Let's keep the sexy train rolling and move into a Chris Pine film. Let's go deeper and talk about an actual Chris Pine movie, not just his hair. All the Old Knives, hitting theaters and Amazon Prime, Giannis Metz, written and based on the book by Olen Steinhauer. This is on 1,500 watch lists. Two CIA agents and ex-lovers are brought back together after a failed rescue attempt and forced to blur the lines between profession and passion. So I think the embargo is officially up for this movie as of this episode being released, and I'm going to shock you, Mia. I really like this movie.
I'm speechless.
Look at the cast of this movie, right?
No, you're right. The cast is incredible. Like you got Tandy Way Newton in there, Lawrence Fishburne, Jonathan Pryce. Like the cast is incredible. And Tandy Way and Chris Pine's chemistry was
off the charts.
It was off the charts. I really, really did enjoy their steamy scenes.
Oh my God,
there's
I forgot
a lot
about
in
that
there
scene,
for yeah. There are several steamy scenes. So there's a lot in there for the hashtag Chris Pine nuts.
The amount of hashtags that are going to catch on from this episode are insane. But I will say I had to add this movie to my man-ass list because Chris Pine, he's letting it all hang out back there in this movie.
Yes, he is.
So I do want to compare this to someone, and I gave this 4 stars. So this is a positive comparison. So I sometimes go over to my in-law's house, and they're watching some, you know, BS TBS movie, some kind of like thriller show or, you know, a movie that hasn't been on cable yet and it's finally on cable. You got like 3 hours and it's commercials. And sometimes you just want to sit down and be like, what is this? Am I going to sit here at my in-laws and do nothing for the next 3 hours and watch this thriller that I've never heard of? This is kind of what that felt like to me. I had a lot of fun with the thriller aspect of this movie. And Chris Pine's hair in this film, there needs to be some kind of investigation. He has like, when it's pulled back, it looks gorgeous.
He has some of the finest hair in Hollywood. He's also got those beautiful blue eyes. He's easily the best Chris of the Hollywood Chrises. The main Hollywood Chrises, the four white Chrises.
What's the order? What's the order in your mind for the four Chrises?
Oh, it's so easy. It's so easy. Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, Chris Pratt, way at the bottom.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
Another guy with great hair, Tony Hawk. Yeah, I'll say it. He does have great hair. So Tony Hawk, Until the Wheels Fall Off, new HBO documentary just dropped on Tuesday night. This is a wide-ranging, definitive look at Hawk's life and iconic career and his relationship with the sport with which he's been synonymous for decades, featuring unprecedented access, never-before-seen footage, and interviews with Hawk and prominent figures in the sport.
Abby, what did you think? You watched it last night, this morning. What was your vibe?
I admittedly don't know a ton about Tony Hawk, but I've always been charmed by him and his social media presence and his awesome video games, which I'm very glad they touched on in this documentary.
Oh, yeah.
For those who are fans of the Tony Hawk video games, don't worry. They talk about it. So, yeah, I actually really enjoyed learning about him and his life as somebody who wasn't super familiar with skateboarding or Tony Hawk himself. So I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, Sam Jones directed this 3.7 average. It's been out for a few days on HBO Max and 670 watch lists. One thing that stuck out to me watching this was I think my Tony Hawk knowledge started when he did the 900 at the X Games and probably all of my skateboarding knowledge. But there's a segment right before that where skateboarding was like not popular. And they talk about how, you know, him and his family were kind of like broke for years. And he was just trying to pick up like odd jobs around just to make ends meet, how he couldn't even pay the water bill. So I felt very seen by Tony in that moment. But that was an era that I kind of was unfamiliar with. Most people probably only know of like Tony Hawk, famous, rich video game and clips. But it was cool to see that there's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I also really actually liked the family stuff as well. He told this really genuinely funny anecdote about his mom. Okay, so he shares this childhood memory of his mom threatening to flush herself down the toilet if he doesn't like shut up and sit still.
Right.
And that made me laugh. He's so terrified. He like kind of reenacts it where he was like, I was so scared that she was really going to do it. And it was just so charming. Yeah. Really, really sweet documentary.
He sounded like a handful, to say the least, when he was a kid. So Gemma actually talked to Sam Jones about this film, and we actually have a clip. Him talking about his relationship with his own family. We talked about the family relationships, about how he doesn't quite yet share his love of film with his daughters yet. But let's run the clip. Let's play right now.
My chapter of sharing the films I love with them is still coming. I hope it's still coming. To me, one of the greatest things that I can do as a father is try to find some middle ground, some meeting point where our interests can overlap. And it was so easy when they were little because, you know, I just spent all the time in the world with them. And then, you know, like all kids are supposed to do, they grow up and they become independent and their friends become more important than their parents. But on this film, and this is something I haven't told anybody, but my daughter, who's 15, she's a sophomore in high school, and she's very into graphic design. And so I had her do the titles on the Tony Hawk film. So we got to work together. And that to me was my sort of surreptitious way of spending time with my daughter, but also to share some of what I love with her.
So let's look back last week's movies. What happened last week? Remember, if you want your review or list potentially featured on an episode of Weekend Watchlist, just tag Weekend Watchlist to your reviews or lists. And Mia, we should just talk about what we talked about at the top of the show. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is the number one movie on Dave's official top 250 narrative films list. It beat Parasite. What do you think?
I think it's well-deserved. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It is everything the modern blockbuster should be. Supremely well choreographed, acted. The visuals are so dynamic and interesting. It also has a very, very touching story at its core about family and ending cycles of trauma, generational cycles of trauma. And being the child of immigrants, like there's just so much packed into this and they completely pulled it off. I'm just so impressed by it. I cannot recommend it enough. I keep saying that to everybody who will listen.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's only ever been two movies that were number one on that list, the official list. There are imitators, but Dave's list is the official one. So Godfather before Parasite and just those two. So there's only ever now been three movies that were the highest rated in the Letterboxd community. So that's pretty awesome to see. And I referenced earlier, but we have an interview, podcast interview coming next week with the Daniels. They were a lot of fun to talk to. Very cool. And I watched Swiss Army Man last week, their other feature film with Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano. So much fun. I was cracking up.
Oh, yeah. Swiss Army Man is a ton of fun. Shout out to Mary Elizabeth Winstead as well, who is in that film.
Gosh.
Love her.
Every close-up of a farting ass was poetry in motion, yeah. So last week, Morbius dropped as well. So I'll spotlight a few folks that tagged their reviews weekend watch list. Rye stated, my confidence in Marvel Studios making a decent enough PG-13 Blade movie increasing exponentially after watching this. I will say that I'm pretty pumped for the Marvel Blade movie. That has my interest.
Are they bringing Parker Posey back?
That's a very good question. Maybe we'll get them on the show to answer that question. Yeah, put them on the spot.
That's my one question that I know everyone is wondering. Will Parker Posey be in the Marvel Blade?
Ask the questions. Idris Elba is about to send us another statement on Parker Posey just to get the word out. What about you? What are you thinking about last week when you look back at the movies that dropped last week?
I just watched Apollo 10 and a Half, A Space Age Childhood by Richard Linklater. Mm. And I quite enjoyed it. It's on Netflix now. You can check it out there. Very little fanfare considering how unique and creative this film is. It's animated. It's kind of like Waking Life, Linklater's Waking Life, which is one of my favorites of his, also very underrated. So it's like a rotoscope type animation.
Yeah.
It's also narrated by Jack Black, which is really fun.
Love his. Do you watch his YouTube channel?
No, I don't.
You need to get on that, man.
I will. We have another review tagged hashtag weekend watch list for Everything Everywhere All at Once. The reason I don't believe in multiverses is because that would mean there's a me out there who doesn't like this film. And I think we all know that's bullshit. BB Banks 2121. So true.
So true. Next on our list this week is the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022 that Jack puts together. And Jack has a lot of facts this week for the movers and shakers for the past week of films. So for the most part, we'll let Jack speak for himself. Everything Everywhere All at Once, doing the impossible and not only overtaking the Beatles rooftop concert, but beating Parasite to number one. And if you remember listening to the show since we started it, Jack pretty much almost made a guarantee that the rooftop concert would not be beat by the end of the year. And it's already been toppled by All at Once. So it just speaks to the power of that movie that came out of nowhere and shocked a lot of people. So pretty cool to see.
Biggest call out besides that switch is the eligibility of Mad God, the directorial debut of legendary visual effects god Phil Tippett. He is the man responsible for the stop motion parts of Star Wars, Jurassic Park, and most importantly, RoboCop. That enters at number 12. He's been working on Mad God for over 30 years, and it's his response to the CGI of Jurassic Park when he felt like he was out of a career. Mm. This film had a long festival run through 2021, and it was just announced that it will be released on Shudder from June 16th.
Hell yeah.
Yes,
hell
it has been the top horror movie of 2021, and it's now the top horror movie of 2022 since it's getting its first proper release.
I saw the trailer drop for this when they announced that Shudder was picking it up, and I need to see this thing as soon as possible. I'm so annoyed that many of the Letterboxd team have seen it, and now I have to wait until June, but it looks insane. I mean, just hearing that this is the guy who was responsible for the stop motion Star Wars and RoboCop, one of my all-time favorite movies, like, get me to the theater, Shudder. Shudder, if you're listening this week, hook us up. Please.
Please. Yes. I tried to see this film during Beyond Fest in LA and the tickets sold out like that. Like, it is a very anticipated film.
All right. Last segment of the show. Let's get into our own watch lists. We use this section to talk about what's on our watch list. We shuffle them. And the last time we were together, Mia, you shuffled your watch list and you got Scanners. It was going to be your first ever viewing. Talk to me, please.
I loved Scanners. There was never going to be a world where I didn't love Scanners, much like that Everything Everywhere All at Once review. Because I love Cronenberg. And what was really fascinating to me as a Cronenberg fan was how this was kind of one of his, not his first, but one of his more defining films of his career. Like that head explosion is very famous, GIF-wise. So it was very cool to see kind of the bedrock for a lot of what was to come. Mm-hmm. Just undeniably cool body horror and effects, practical effects. I loved it.
Great. You know, I was looking at my review. I had a review. What did I say? This was 2019. Feels like a decade ago. I wrote, Stephen Lack turns in one of the worst leading actor performances I've ever seen.
Stephen
Lack, what was he doing in that movie? What did you think?
We were making jokes. We were like, Stephen is lacking in his performance. It's fine. We loved Scanners, but I do think that if it had a better leading man performance, it would have been like a bona fide masterpiece. Mm-hmm. The movie made me think about how important casting is. And it's something that we don't think about as much, but it's just so crucial to the movie.
Scanners is streaming on HBO Max and the Criterion right now, believe it or not. And this is a 3.5 average on Letterboxd. My buddy Proto wrote a review. He's been going on his own Cronenberg journey, and I'm not sure if he'll ever finish. He hasn't found that one Cronenberg that really he loved.
Existence.
You know what? I don't think he's seen that yet. Speaking of that movie, there's a scene in that movie where people are using like tablets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Almost exactly how we use tablets and phones today. And it freaked me out.
Yes. No, I made all my friends watch it with me for my birthday last December. And that was what people were struck by, was everybody like using iPads in this movie from 1999.
Yes.
It's just so prescient, Cronenberg.
And there's like a scene where they're just like sitting in a room looking down at a cell phone tablet. And I was like, WTF is happening right now.
Yeah.
So Proto writes in his review about Stephen Lack. We love Stephen. You know, Stephen, we love you. You're the official actor of the Weekend Watchlist. Stephen Lack managed to set fire to every scene he was in. The audio was captured from Mr. Lack in the morgue from his body 3 days dead.
Well, I will say, wait, I want to give one more compliment if we have time. I'll give Stephen Lack a compliment and say that some of his like physical face acting when he's doing the scanning power thing and he's like whipping his head dramatically like up and down, and that part was cool. That genuinely, he nailed that part. And I said as much while watching. So there's a nice thing, Stephen, because I know you're listening.
There's a silver lining, Stephen, and we'll always find it.
Mm-hmm. So now let's shuffle our watch list again. So let's both head to our watch lists on Letterboxd, filter service by stream only, and then sort by shuffle. And then whichever movie is first, we have to watch before we co-host our next episode.
All right, here we go. My movie is directed by Ben Wheatley, 2012 Sightseers. Death has a ginger beard. Chris wants to show girlfriend Tina his world, but events conspire against the couple and their dream caravan holiday takes a very wrong turn.
Uh-oh.
So this is the director of In the Earth. Remember In the Earth came out last year and people were all abuzz about that like lo-fi sci-fi movie. So that's my movie for the next time we meet.
You're going to freak it when I announce my movie. Get ready to freak it because it is very on theme with this week. It is the film Blade.
What?
I know.
You got Blade?
I told you you would freak it. I did get Blade. And here I am admitting
I'm all chilled. I got goosebumps right now, Mia. I got goosebumps. There's some kind of entity in the studio with us that has conspired to get Blade for your next movie. That's incredible.
Yes. Scary. Creepy.
It is scary.
I mean, I should watch Blade because I know that Parker Posey's in one of them.
So next time we'll meet, we'll talk about these movies at the end of the show. And just to call out some friends of mine in the 70mm Discord, we're also shuffling their watch list after listening to our episode last week. And they got movies that they are going to try to watch before the next episode. So if you do that, also tag your reviews with the Weekend Watch List and we'll spotlight them at the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes.
Thank you so much to our crew and to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. And thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.